And now Damian Lewis reads part 6 of The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Ortsey. Marguerite and Sir Andrew Ffoulkes have arrived in Calais and have had their first news of Sir Percy, whom Marguerite now knows is the mysterious Scarlet Pimpernel, and whom she's unwittingly betrayed to Chauvelin. Part 6. The Trap.
Sir Andrew rose and listened at the door of the inner room through which Brogard had just disappeared. He also ran up the rickety steps that led to the attic to assure himself there were none of Chauvelin's spies about the place. "Are we alone?" said Marguerite gaily. "May we talk?" "As cautiously as possible," he entreated. "Faith, man, but you wear a glum face," said Marguerite. "Surely there is no longer any cause for fear. My husband will be here under this very roof within the next half hour, perhaps. Chauvelin and his gang have not yet arrived."
"Nay, madame, that I fear we do not know."
"What do you mean?"
"He was at Dover at the same time that we were. I saw him on the beach not 5 minutes before we embarked. He was disguised as a curé, so that Satan, his own guardian, would scarce have known him. But I heard him then, bargaining for a vessel to take him swiftly to Calais, and he must have set sail less than an hour after we did. Chauvelin knows of this inn from the papers he stole from me at the Fisherman's Rest, and on landing will come straight here."
"He cannot have landed yet," she said. "We have an hour's start on him, and Percy will be here directly. We shall be mid-channel ere Chauvelin has realized that we have slipped through his fingers."
"Madame," he replied, "you are forgetting the most important factor. Do you think that Blakeney would leave Calais without having accomplished what he set out to do? There's the Comte de Tournay, Saint-Just, and others who await the arrival of the Scarlet Pimpernel, who has pledged his honour to take them safely across the Channel."
"Faith, Sir Andrew, you are right, and I would not now shame myself by trying to dissuade him from doing his duty. But I still believe that his safety depends upon his knowing that Chauvelin is on his track. What say you to a voyage of reconnaissance in the village, whilst I wait here for his coming? You might come across Percy's track and thus save valuable time."
"But this is such a villainous hole for you to wait in."
"Nay, that I do not mind. But you might ask our surly host if he could let me wait in another room, where I could be safer from the prying eyes of any chance traveller."
Sir Andrew went to the door of the inner room and knocked. "Brogard," he said peremptorily, "my lady would wish to rest here a while. Could you give her the use of another room?" Brogard opened the door and pointed to the attic.
"She can wait up there," he said with a grunt, and retired again.
"Nothing could be better," said Marguerite. "I can see everything without being seen."
"May I entreat you, madame, to do nothing rash," said Sir Andrew as Marguerite prepared to ascend the rickety stairs. "Remember, this place is infested with spies. Do not, I beg of you, reveal yourself to Sir Percy unless you are absolutely sure that you are alone with him."
"Have no fear," she said. "I would not jeopardize my husband's life. I will watch my opportunity and serve him in the manner I think he needs it most."
"If I do not come across Blakeney in half an hour, I shall return, expecting to find him here," said Sir Andrew.
"Yes, that will be best. We can afford to wait for half an hour. Chauvelin cannot possibly be here before that. Good luck to you, friend. Have no fear for me."
The next quarter of an hour went by swiftly. In the room downstairs, Brogard had for a while busied himself with clearing the table and rearranging it for another guest. Suddenly, Marguerite caught the sound of distant footsteps drawing near. Her heart gave a wild leap of joy. Was it Percy at last? No, the step did not seem quite as long, nor quite as firm as his. She also thought that she could hear two distinct sets of footsteps. Yes, that was it. Two men were coming this way. Two strangers, perhaps, to get a drink, or... But she had no time to conjecture, for presently there was a call at the door, and the next moment it was violently opened from the outside, whilst a rough, commanding voice shouted,
"Eh, citoyen Brogard,
Hola.
Marguerite heard Brogard's shuffling footsteps as he came out of the inner room. Then her heart seemed all at once to stop beating. One of the newcomers came within her range of vision. He was dressed in the soutane, broad-brimmed hat and buckled shoes habitual to the French curé. But as he stood opposite the innkeeper, he threw open his soutane for a moment, displaying the tricolour scarf of officialism, which sight immediately had the effect of transforming Brogard's attitude of contempt into one of cringing obsequiousness. Marguerite could not see the curé's face, which was shaded by his hat, but she recognized the whole gait of the man. It was Chauvelin.
"A plate of soup and a bottle of wine," said Chauvelin imperiously to Brogard. "Then clear out of here. I want to be alone."
Silently, Brogard obeyed and hurried back to the inner room, and Chauvelin now beckoned to the man who had accompanied him. Marguerite at once recognized him as Degas, his secretary, whom she had often seen in Paris in days gone by. For a moment she dreaded lest Chauvelin should order Degas to search the place. Fortunately, however, he seemed more keen to talk to his secretary than worry about spies.
"The English schooner?" he asked.
"She was lost sight of at sundown, citoyen," replied Degas, "but was then making west towards Cap Grinet."
"Ah, good," muttered Chauvelin.
"And now, Captain Jutley, what did he say?"
"He assured me that the orders you sent him have been implicitly obeyed. All the roads which converge to this place are patrolled night and day, the beach and cliffs too."
"Does he know of Père Blanchard's hut, mentioned in the Pimpernel's plans where he is to meet the fugitives?"
"Non, citoyen. Nobody seems to know of it by that name. There are any amount of fishermen's huts all along the coast."
"That'll do. Now about tonight," interrupted Chauvelin impatiently. "Go back to Jutley at once. Tell him that you men are to keep the sharpest possible lookout for any stranger who may be walking, riding, or driving along the road or the beach. More especially for a tall stranger, whom I need not describe further, as probably he will be disguised. But he cannot very well conceal his height, except by stooping. You understand?"
"Perfectly, citoyen," replied Degas.
"As soon as any of the men have sighted a stranger, they are to keep him in view. But someone must ride straight back here and report to me. Is that clear?"
"Absolutely clear, citoyen."
"Very well, then. Go and see Jutley at once, and ask the captain to let you have a half a dozen more men and bring them here with you. You can be back in 10 minutes. And one more thing. I want the tall stranger alive, if possible. Now go."
Degas saluted and left the house. As Marguerite sat in this lonely room, she felt as if all that she had suffered was nothing compared with this. Chauvelin's plans were well laid, and not a loophole was left. Then, as she watched Chauvelin, a sound caught her ear, which turned her very heart to stone. And yet that sound was not calculated to inspire anyone with horror, for it was merely the cheerful sound of a gay, fresh voice singing, "God Save the King." The next moment, the door was thrown open. There was dead silence for a second or two. Marguerite held her breath, and then saw Percy's tall figure, arrayed in his usual finery, crossing the room. He walked to the table, jovially clapped the curé on the back and said,
"Odd's fish, Monsieur Chauvelin! I vow I never thought of meeting you here."
Chauvelin, who had been in the very act of conveying soup to his mouth, fairly choked. There was no doubt that this bold move on the part of the enemy had been wholly unexpected, and the daring impudence of it completely nonplussed him for the moment.
"I am so damned sorry," Sir Percy said cheerfully. "I seem to have upset you, eating soup, too. Nasty, awkward thing, soup. Begad, a friend of mine died once, choked just like you with a spoonful of soup."
Then he sat down at the table, pulled the soup tureen towards him, calmly helped himself, then poured out a glass of wine. For a moment, Marguerite wondered what Chauvelin would do. His disguise was so good that perhaps he meant to deny his identity. But Chauvelin was too astute to make such an obviously false move, and already he had stretched out his hand and said pleasantly,
"I am indeed charmed to see you, Sir Percy. You must excuse me, I thought you were the other side of the channel. Sudden surprise almost took my breath away."
"Ah, it did that, didn't it?"
Sir Percy said with a good-humoured grin, and poured himself out another glass of wine.
"But by Jove, sir, I didn't know that you were in holy orders."
I stammered
Chauvelin. The calm impudence of his antagonist had evidently thrown him off his usual balance.
"But I should have known you anywhere," continued Sir Percy, "although the wig and hat have changed you a bit."
Chauvelin took a quick look at his watch.
"Oh, you're in a hurry, sir," said Sir Percy. "An appointment, perhaps? I pray you take no heed of me. My time's my own."
He dragged a chair to the hearth.
"You are expecting a friend, maybe?"
"Aye, a friend."
"Not a lady, I trust, Monsieur l'Abbé," laughed Blakeney. "Surely the Holy Church does not allow, eh? What? But I say, come by the fire. It's getting damned cold."
And so saying, he dragged another chair to the hearth. Chauvelin sat down beside the hearth in such a way as to command a view of the door. Degas had been gone nearly a quarter of an hour. But then, through the stillness of the night, Marguerite heard some distance away the sound of numerous and measured treads. It was Degas and his men. Another 3 minutes and they would be here. Percy had moved to the table whereon the remnants of the supper were scattered. His back was turned to Chauvelin, and he was still prattling, but from his pocket he had taken his snuff-box, and quickly he emptied the contents of the pepper-pot into it. Then, going up to Chauvelin, he said,
"This snuff is better than I have ever tasted. Will you honour me, Monsieur l'Abbé?"
Chauvelin took a pinch of snuff. Only he who has ever by accident sniffed vigorously a dose of pepper can have the faintest conception of the hopeless condition to which Chauvelin was reduced. Sneeze after sneeze nearly choked him. He was blind, deaf, and dumb for the moment, and during that moment Blakeney, without the slightest haste, took up his hat and calmly stalked out of the room. Chauvelin had partially recovered and managed to reach the door just as Degas' knock was heard on the outside. Before his secretary could say a word, he had managed to stammer between sneezes,
"The tall stranger. Did any of you see him?"
"The tall stranger?"
"Was here, in this room, 5 minutes ago, having supper at that table. Damn his impudence! For obvious reasons, I dared not tackle him alone.
He cannot go far without being sighted, citoyen. Captain Jutley sent 40 men as reinforcements for the patrol duty. 20 went down to the beach. He assured me that no stranger could possibly get to the beach or reach a boat without being seen."
"Good.
I have further news for you, citoyen."
"What is it?"
"A tall Englishman had a conversation about 3/4 of an hour ago with a Jew, Reuben by name, who lives not 10 paces from here."
"Yes, and?"
queried Chauvelin impatiently.
"The tall Englishman wished to hire his horse and cart, which was to have been ready for him by 11 o'clock.
"Find him,"
Chauvelin ordered.
Part 6 of The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Ortsey was read by Damien Lewis. The book's abridged by Sarah Kilgariff and is a CSA Word production for BBC Radio 2 by Clive Stanhope. Next week, Chauvelin is on the track of his elusive quarry and heads for Père Blanchard's hut, the known meeting place of the Scarlet Pimpernel and the Royalist fugitives. The trap is sprung.